Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it feels counterintuitive, like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. Thank you for joining me today. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted to bring you some great insights and information from two fabulous guests. Later, we'll be hearing from Keren Brines-McLean, a medical herbalist and great friend of the show. We'll also hear from Stephanie Banks, an intuitive channel, and we'll hear about her work as well as radical self-care. But first, did you know that both brain size and IQ are falling in modern humans? And at the same time, we're seeing a big increase in mental illness, dementia. Well, if you listen to my recent interview with Patrick Holford, founder and CEO of Food for the Brain, you'll know that what we eat is key and omega-3 fatty acids are a crucial component of our diet. The charity already offers a free cognitive function test to assess how well our diet and lifestyle are supporting our brain health. And now we can all test our omega-3 levels with a home test kit from foodforthebrain.org. All the details, including price, are on their website. They say a new study shows that the higher the omega-3 index and DHA, which is what Food for the Brain measures, the greater both the brain size and the cognition of older people. Brain size predicts cognitive abilities. Well, something to think about there if you're concerned about your omega-3 levels. That was the one area that needed some attention when I did the online cognitive function test myself. Now, dementia played a big part in the life of my first guest today. Stephanie Banks learned how to channel when her mother was diagnosed with dementia. It was a way of communicating with her. And she's written a bestseller about that journey called Joining Joni, Staying Connected to Your Loved One Through Dementia. Stephanie is a conscious channel who also mentors clients in discerning their own inner voice of wisdom, enhancing their confidence and self-trust, improving their relationships, clarifying their soul's purpose, and finding their joy. I know a lot of people are skeptical about channeling, so first I asked her to explain what channeling is and how she works with it.
Channeling for me is simply connecting to divine energy and wisdom. That's it. That's all I mean by it. There's a variety of ways to do it. I actually believe we are all of us channeling all of the time. There are, you know, art is a form of channeling, as is writing, as is music, creativity, self-expression. We channel in our relationships. We channel as we're tuning into what our body needs from the store. So this is not something that is unique to me. It's just that I have chosen to really, really hone this skill. I get a lot of mentorship, put in thousands of hours of practice so that I can tune into souls. That's how I channel. I channel souls that are here on the planet. I channel souls that are on the other side. That part of the work is called mediumship. I channel animals. I channel trees. I channel Mother Earth, really any essential energy we can tune into. And I receive messages from all of those perspectives. Also spirit guides. Spirit guides are our non-physical energetic support network. Whether you believe in their existence or not, we have support. We're never alone. And so it's really incumbent upon us to ask for that support and guidance and to be in gratitude when we receive some form or version of it, even if it is different than what we thought we wanted in our minds. But that's it. I mean, channeling for me is the best place to be. That vibration of love, which is the channel I attune to, it's called fifth dimensional consciousness, and it's unity consciousness. It's pure love. It's acceptance. It's unconditional. And that's where I go when I channel. And now you can see why I would want to spend more and more time there, because who wouldn't want to spend more time in love?
Absolutely. And I love the way that you've described it there, because, you know, I guess I channel all the time because I tune into my body. I tune into what's around me. I have aloe plants in the house. And if I've, you know, burnt myself or something, I'll ask them if I may take a leaf. Thank you very much. And I get a message back and they direct me to which one they want me to take. So I guess, you know, and people think I'm crazy, right? But it is a reality. And yes, you tune into, if you go forest bathing, tuning into the trees around you, that's what I tell people to do. And so that is a form of channeling. I love the way that you describe that. Yeah, fantastic. And so when you are working with people, how does that come into the work you do? In other words, so where's the bridge between the channeling and the helping people with whatever issues they have?
Mm-hmm. Well, first I will say yay for channeling plants, because isn't that, it is beautiful. I mean, here's this entire kingdom out there that has been waiting for us to be present with them and to listen. And it's such a beautiful relationship that we can choose with our plant friends. So I love that your aloe communicates with you and helps heal you. I mean, this is the value of being connected. Yes. And then my clients will come to me with any variety of questions. So oftentimes, this will not come as a surprise to you, our greatest struggles are in the relationship realm, right? Mm-hmm. This is where we do our biggest growth. So they might have a struggle in their relationship with a partner, with a spouse, with a child, with a supervisor, sometimes even with themselves.
Yeah.
And hearing from the soul perspective lets us go beyond the personality. It lets us go beyond the three-dimensional, five sensory way of experiencing the world. And we can hear from the deepest place, from the most meaningful, insightful place. And that can really change everything. And I work with parents who are having struggle with their children. They might be young children. They might be grown children. It doesn't really matter. But they say, could you please channel the soul of my child? I have no idea how to support them. We just keep bumping up against one another. It is a stressful relationship. We're not understanding each other. What do they need from me? And I have this beautiful opportunity to go right to spirit and hear directly from the soul of that person, of that being. And they will say, this is what I need. This is what's working. This is what isn't. This is what our contract is about. This is what we came here to do. Could you please do these things to honor that more, or get out of my way and let me honor it? You know, oftentimes that's the message.
Yeah.
So that's really the bridge. I simply have learned how to get out of my own way so that I can bring forward these messages. And because I come from a neutral yet loving place, I don't have any attachment to what comes through. And because I'm willing to do the inner work to maintain myself as a clear, high vibrational channel, I have trust in what comes through, and that my clients do as well.
I love that notion that you can tune into somebody's soul and find out what that child person needs from the other that isn't being met. And my mind's whirring at the moment. I can think of a couple of people who might want to take advantage of that particular skill on your... But don't we all know parents who are struggling with kids, especially right now, because kids have been really put through the mill over the last couple of years, and they probably need different things. It's a very different time to when I was a child, which was a long time ago. What are the other ways that you can help people?
Honestly, there's nothing that channeling can't address that is a challenge to us here in having our human experiences. So That's my answer to that, honestly. But I'll give you some more examples so people can get a flavor for it. And I'll take you back to my start in channeling. My mother was diagnosed with dementia when she was, her symptoms started when she was in her 50s, so very young. And it's a type of dementia that affects younger people. So by the time we had a proper diagnosis, she was well into the symptoms, and my relationship with her was suffering greatly. Even though I'm a clinician by background and I'm a speech therapist and I have had years of experience working with people with cognitive deficits, the mother-daughter relationship is a complicated one. Mm-hmm. And it was not easy for me to find ways to stay connected to my mom. So I had my best friend at the time channel my mother's soul for me. I was not a channel then. I didn't even know it was something that I could learn. So I relied on her. We would sit in her backyard and she would just tune into my mom and I would understand exactly what my role was with her. It clarified and magnified some of these areas, ways she needed me to walk with her, ways she needed me to give her more space, ways she needed me to get my nose out of her business with my father. And such, you know, to let them play out their soul journey and agreement. And this made my life so much more easy and easeful as I related to her, that it allowed for us to stay in this beautiful, loving space for the remainder of her life. And I was able to do the inner work also to release some of the stuff I was carrying, because through the channeling, I wasn't even prior to the channeling, I wasn't aware that I was still holding on to things from childhood and resentments, etc. So when my mother left her body, she left in a much more free state, in large part because of what I was able to understand and do and how I was able to show up for her. So that's possible for anybody. Also, in our romantic relationships, we often have certain struggles that are just frustrating that we don't understand. So I channel for couples who want to understand from one another how they're here to serve into their soul's agreements, or how, you know, sometimes whether or not the relationship is meant to carry forward. Sometimes our relationships complete in a lifetime. And even though we might have legal agreements that suggest otherwise, and that can be very hard to come around to. Now, I don't tell people, oh, you're meant to separate or get divorced. That is not my role. Yeah. But understanding what they have completed together, that can be celebrated and honored. And then they can decide based on their free will how they want to characterize and have the container be for their relationship. And in the animal kingdom, you know, so many of us love our animals. We have all these phenomenal connections to our domesticated pets and also to the wild animals. And sometimes people will have an animal that's whose behavior is a little different than it has been, or whose body is experiencing different symptoms. And while I'm not a medical medium and I will not give any type of medical advice or diagnoses, I'm tuning into energy and the soul of the spirit of that being. So it gives a lot of important, helpful things to guide their person in their care.
I see often how people love their pets and they take care, great care of their pets. Yet they don't really quite get what their pet needs. If they're, like you say, if their behaviors change or if there's an issue. But then, you know, the benefits, the health benefits for both that come about when you are able to really tap into what's needed, probably on both sides. Mm. That's great, isn't it?
Yes, it's very healing for all of us to be connected at that level. And yeah, I encourage people. I don't want to be the only one channeling here. You know, they know their pet best. The thing is that we are trained away from trusting ourselves.
We are. Yeah.
And so what we might be inclined to know at a very deep level, we are disinclined to trust at that same level. So oftentimes I am not telling anybody anything new. I am just speaking it in a way that it lands and they can hear it and it affirms what they have sensed, and then they can carry that forward.
Absolutely. It's a shame, isn't it, that we've moved away from that inner knowing and trusting.
Yeah, but we can go back. That's the good news. It perhaps served in certain ways. Obviously, it did. Otherwise, we wouldn't have engaged in it for a while. Maybe it felt like it kept us safe for a bit, or fitting in, or in certain family dynamics or cultural conditioning. But now there's this great movement to come back to our wisdom. And I do envision a world in which each of us are operating from that deep inner voice of love and wisdom. And that world is amazing. We are in harmony with life. We are in cyclical existence. We are caring for one another. We are tending to our earth mother. It's a beautiful world I see.
Yes, and I see a similar world, and where we live in love. We actually are living in that love vibration, which doesn't necessarily, by the way, mean that we all love each other and do everything beautifully and, you know, right. But it's a very different environment that can be created within that love energy, that love frequency. Yeah. And you talk about care. Now, you have talked about something called radical self-care, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Radical self-care. The word radical is before it, because it is a commitment and devotion to oneself. And it's not, you know, some people think of self-care as, oh yes, I get my pedicures and my massages and my hair done. No, that's not what I'm talking about at all. That stuff is wonderful. If that makes you feel good, absolutely do that. There's no judgment on it. But radical self-care really encompasses all of the things that make you feel that connect you to your joy, that bring you to a place of delicious embodiment, I would like to say, that also address your energetic body. It addresses your physicality. It addresses your emotional body. You allow yourself all the feelings you are meant to have. You tend to them with kindness, with compassion, with tenderness, with acceptance. So radical self-care involves everything: self-compassion, fierce self-compassion, self-love, self-acceptance, compassion for others, tending to your needs, all of your needs, emotional, physical, spiritual, ensuring that the most basic things are in place, that you are getting the rest that you need, proper hydration, excellent sourcing for your nutrition, that your diet is in alignment with your values. That's very important. Very important. People wonder about that a lot. Does it really matter what I eat? Yeah, it definitely does. And that's what's included. You know, it's daily choices that we make. I sort of believe there are no neutral choices. We're either contributing to compassion and something beneficial, or the opposite. So, that's how I look at it. And it's an ongoing practice. I do nothing with perfection here. My radical self-care is, it's often trial and error. I definitely know when I'm off, with my practice, because I get irritable and grouchy and, cranky, and then look for salty foods.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. It is interesting, isn't it? And it goes even further than the self. And I'll explain what I mean by that in just a moment. But first, it's time to take a short break to hear from our station sponsors. Back after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist, and my first guest today, intuitive channel Stephanie Banks.
We were talking about radical self-care before the break, and I was about to offer my thoughts on the matter. Here they are.
What I think is that radical self-care isn't just about the me, the body. It's about the environment around us as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's about absolutely. It's about the choices we make. It's about being able to say no
mm-hmm.
and mean it and stick to that. It's about when we're buying food, knowing where we're buying food from, knowing what we're buying, who we're giving our money to. Do we really want to give these people our money? There's a farm shop not too far away from me. And they actually posted a lovely post on one of the social media channels the other day, talking about how, you know, they'd been walking around the farm and they realized that the farm and the farm shop supports, something like 9 families or 9 family members, you know, and then 16 or more local businesses, and then loads more regional businesses, and then even more national businesses, all small businesses. And that when we choose to shop there, we're actually directly supporting all these people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Directly supporting all these people. And I thought it was a lovely post, because surely that is also about self-care, isn't it? That's radical
self-care. Oh, yes, it is. You know, money, it's a topic all on its own, obviously.
Yes.
We could spend days talking about our relationship with money, but money is just an energy, right? It's why it's called a currency.
Mm-hmm.
And it's designed to move towards us and away from us. And when we give it the job and the role and the blessing of moving away from us, where it lands matters. And so, mm-hmm. yes, as you're illustrating right now, you could have stand at the store and have 2 items, one in each hand, and one is made by, let's say, a factory farming process where animals are essentially tortured and suffering, you know, yeah. and live horrific lives. And then the other item you're looking at is locally grown, tended to, cared for, supporting other families, it directly impacts positively your own community where you traverse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these are the things we really do need to consider. And absolutely, radical self-care is not about a singular self, because we don't exist separate from each other. That's not possible. That is illusion. So because of that, we have a responsibility to care for one another and to direct where our resources go and how we want those resources to be of blessing to others.
Yes. And I know that it's difficult for some people. If you live in a city, you might struggle to find local producers or struggle to stay away from the mass produced food, if we're staying on the food idea. But there are always going to be some locally produced things that you can put, you know, you can buy, or even just businesses that have a little bit more of an ethical slant to them, you know, that care a little bit more about what they're doing. They care about their staff. They care about their workers. They care about what the ingredients they're putting into their food are, where that comes from, all of that. So it doesn't have to be right directly at the farm door or at the farm gate, but just thinking a little bit more about what we're putting our money into really pays dividends. I think I am pretty convinced these days that it contributes to my well-being quite substantially.
Of course it does. That's why I said before, there is no neutral here. Like everywhere, the decisions and choices we make, and with regards, simply speaking, in this moment to our money, there is no neutral. We are either contributing to something that is of care and growth and higher loving frequency, or not. There is just not a neutral, that we just have so many options. And even for people who don't live close to farms, we still have so many options. Yeah. And it's really, we have to educate ourselves and, you know, ask questions and make our desires known for different ways of caring for the planet, different products. You go to a restaurant and you get takeout food. Well, what's the container that they're using for their takeout food? That matters, because you might be ordering from an organic, you know, vegetarian place, and they're using foam. No, you know, yeah, there's some dissonance there. So yeah, we need to speak up. We need to make the request. This all has to do with, you know, radical self-care as well, because everything we do to care for ourselves has an immediate and, you know, impact on every being around us.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. And I've had a friend staying with me for the last few days, and we've been eating out a fair amount. And what I loved as well was the fact that on most of the menus that we were seeing, we could see where all the ingredients came from. They could trace every single ingredient, and with most, that nothing had come from much further away than maybe, say, a couple of miles.
And doesn't that feel amazing? Don't you love your meal even more when you know you just walked past that, you know, that patch of strawberries that your dessert is made from? Yeah,
exactly. It really does make an impact, but not just on the mind. It's the whole, your whole system. Your,
that's right.
Your whole,
I mean,
ecosystem. Yeah.
I'm smiling hearing that you had all those wonderful experiences, because I see that as becoming the norm. That's my heart's wish for our global situation.
Yeah, me too. I really hope, I really, like you, I see it spreading. I see more and more people waking up to the fact that it's, you know, we can't be sleepwalking anymore into feeding something that we don't want to feed. We need to be feeding ourselves, nourishing ourselves and our communities. And I think this is a great way of doing it. Yeah.
Yes, it's a very important way. And it's one that we face at least three times every single day of our lives.
Correct. Or with some people even more, but we won't go there.
Yeah. Well, got to have snacks.
Yes, but then, you know, you don't have to go down the route of some having some kind of ultra processed industrialized snack. There are other things.
No, absolutely. But having said that, I also do enjoy, you know, some processed food. So I'm not going to be, yes, no judgment here.
We all do.
It's a balance, and it's about mindfulness.
Yes, it is. And yes, we all, I say, you know, I fall off the wagon sometimes just because you remember a taste or you remember a sensation and you want that again. And then afterwards you think, yeah, I'm not going to do that for a while now. You know, that's it. But we all do it. We all do it. And do you do what I do? I walk through supermarkets, and it's like I have my little antennae going, and I walk down the various shelves in the supermarket, and it's almost like I feel into the vibration of the food on the shelf. And I tell you, most supermarkets, I keep on walking. There's very little I buy in them.
Yes. You know what? I have this friend. She's been a model for me in terms of clean and healthy vegan eating. She's been a really a role model for my diet changes that I've made in the last 5 years. And she has moved so far away from her dependency on grocery store food. It is, I find it to be, it's inspiring to me. And so I watch what she's doing. She's growing a lot of her food. She's also trading with friends who are growing their food too. She knows all the local farmers and who makes the bread and who makes the, you know, all the different products that they offer and where she gets her mushrooms. It's like, this could be a full-time pursuit. And it doesn't have to be, but how fun, you know, if you have the extra time to really get to know your growers and your community and your land in that way. So yes, in the grocery stores, you're going to feel a lot of lower vibration or non-vibrational food.
Yeah, dead food. Exactly. Seriously.
Right. So, yeah. Choose wisely. We've all of us have become very dependent on this particular model of where our food comes from. And then we saw problems during the pandemic with supply chain. So I think that's a potential wake up call too. What if, and I believe this is so, what if we're meant to be growing more of our own food and sharing with each other? I mean, I have a garden in my backyard. It astonishes me every single time I go out there and I'm looking at it daily. The things that grow, the dragonflies, the bees, the butterflies, the birds, the squirrels. I mean, the plants that just take over and produce such beautiful things. I grow papayas and mangoes, bananas. It is incredible.
That's fantastic.
I don't do it. The earth does it. It's just incredible.
Yeah, we don't quite have that sort of exotic fruit up here in Scotland. Whereabouts are you, Stephanie?
I live in Florida, plenty of tropical.
Yeah.
Coconuts grow along the street.
Stop it. But we do have other things. We do have lots of other wonderful things here. But growing, I've started growing as well. And, you know, and with people, you know, in community. And I think that's important as well. And again, is important for our radical self-care. Yeah, I love it. So, I mean, I would urge, and I'm sure you would too, having spoken with you now, I would urge everybody to see where they could join in some kind of effort, because it's a joy, actually, of growing food. You know, is there a community somewhere that grows food? Here in the UK, we have plots of land called allotments where you can grow vegetables and flowers beyond your own back garden, your own backyard. So, you know, find out if there are any allotments anywhere that you can get. Usually, although I say that, usually there is a long waiting list for these allotments. You know, you have to wait for somebody to move on before you can get one. But it's worth looking into.
I was just going to say, we don't have to accept that because there's plenty of land that can be transitioned into gardens, community gardens and allotments, as you say. Yeah. So long waiting lists. No, I don't accept that.
Good one.
we can do better.
Good one. I like that. I like where you're coming from there. Stephanie, excellent. Thank you so, so much for coming onto the show to talk to me about what you do and your work and about radical self-care. I think it's so important. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you or just find out a bit more about you?
My website is soulinsight.com, soulinsight. And all of my information is on there, my upcoming workshops, my master classes, and how to schedule private sessions.
Fantastic. My thanks again to Stephanie Banks. I loved where our conversation took us. I do recommend you check out her website, soulinsight.com, to find out even more about her work. But right now it's time for another short break to hear from our sponsors before we head into the woods for a spot of foraging.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and it's time now to head into the woods for a spot of foraging with my friend of the show, Keren Brines-McLean. She's a medical herbalist and fervent forager, and today it's all about the hawthorn. So we're here in the woods, somewhere in the middle of Fife, and I'm here with Keren Brines-McLean, who people who listen to the show regularly will probably know is a good friend of the show, a brilliant medical herbalist, but also a fantastic forager. And some of you will also know that I've been doing some foraging myself this year. I've done some rose hips, and I made a raw rose hip syrup of my own, which is fantastic. Great source of vitamin C for the winter. And now is the time for something which grows in abundance in the UK, and that is hawthorn. We find it everywhere, don't
we? It is everywhere, and the hedgerows are full of ripe, red, beautiful hawthorn berries at the moment.
Yeah.
And we're really fortunate to have a lot growing around here, because we still have a lot of traditional hedgerows that farmers have used for bordering their fields. It's probably the only thing I'm picking at the moment. We seem to have gone over the mushroom season very quickly this year. There will be some winter mushrooms come along, but at the moment, not a lot of mushrooms about. So I start looking to the hedgerows, and actually, interesting, JJ, I start looking up to the trees as the winter comes in, because if you are going to get mushrooms, they're going to be on the trees and not on the ground, because they're going to get frost. So we tend to go from springtime sort of trees and leaves down to the ground and then back up again as the season goes on. But yeah, you're right, it's hawthorn time of year, and I just love gathering in hawthorn berries. And I use it to make a hawthorn ketchup, which I then use as an ingredient in some of the dishes that I make. So it adds extra nutrition on board.
That's fantastic. And I don't think until I tasted yours I'd ever tasted hawthorn ketchup. And we'll talk a little bit more about that another time, how to make that and why you might make that. But what is it about hawthorn that's so good?
Well, hawthorn is very rich in bioflavonoids that have a beneficial effect on our heart and our circulation. The bioflavonoids in hawthorn work as vasodilators. They open up blood supply. So they stimulate blood flow to the heart muscle itself, but also support blood supply out to the peripheral circulation. So we would use hawthorn for supporting somebody with cold circulation, cold extremities, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. And I've even used it with clients with angina or even heart failure. I've got an elderly client that uses hawthorn and nettle seed in combination, and the hawthorn to look after her heart and the nettle seed to look after her kidneys. So it is a really versatile, useful plant for cardiovascular health.
Wow, but is that all it's good for? No, surely there's other things as well.
I think its main use would be cardiovascular, but you could actually use it as an antioxidant. It has got lots of, I can never say them,
anthocyanins.
It's one of those words that I always have a mental block on. It is full of polyphenols.
Yes.
Yeah. So basically, it is a first-class antioxidant. So although we tend to harness its effects on the cardiovascular system, anything that is antioxidant-rich is going to help to reduce inflammation. I would be encouraging people to really boost up all the antioxidants they can in their diet. We're in an inflammatory world, and actually using antioxidants helps to reduce inflammation. So I would think hawthorn, along with lots of other sort of berries and antioxidant-rich plants, will actually help to reduce the effects of aging, reduce the effects of oxidative stress, keep us fitter and younger for longer.
Wow, so it really is a good thing. And, you know, we've grown up here in the UK seeing hawthorn everywhere. It's actually one of my favourite trees, you would say, because it blooms in May, which is my birthday. And so I love the smell of hawthorn in the spring. And seeing the berries in the autumn time around now, it's just absolutely beautiful. But up until now, I've never actually gone out and foraged for them. We don't do it, do we?
We tend not to do it. And I think it's really sad that people aren't going out there and actually harvesting for themselves. We saw a little bit more of an interest in it during lockdown. Suddenly everyone was making elderflower cordials and they were turning back to nature. And I think, you know, we all have such amazing wild food on our doorsteps. And things like hawthorn, you're not going to mistake it for anything else.
No, absolutely.
You're
not
going to mistake cleavers for anything else or nettle leaf for anything else. And it's there, it's abundant, it's free, and it's going to increase the variation of things that we have in our diet. We've got a very narrow sort of viewpoint when it comes to our diets nowadays. You know, we talk about five a day. We shouldn't be talking about five a day. We should be talking about 200 a week. You know, that's what our ancestors did.
Yes.
Yeah, they had a really wide range of foods.
That message really did a disservice, didn't it? That five a day.
Yeah, because people felt that that was enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, we should be eating much more variety. And actually, harvesting wild foods, we're actually getting foods that have developed their own immune systems.
Yeah.
So they've got much more of that antioxidant potential in them. You know, look at wild blueberries, they're about 10, 15, 20 times more potent in antioxidants than conventionally produced blueberries. Why wouldn't you want to go and pick some of those? Get some exercise, get out in the fresh air, and actually harvest some of your own food.
Yeah, I mean, some people might say, yeah, but where am I going to get wild blueberries? But I think in Scotland they're a lot more common than in England, aren't they?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, in our pine forests you'll get a lot more of
them.
And I know some people will be living in the city centre, so they're not going to be able to do what we've done today and come out to the woods in a 10-minute walk and find hawthorn.
Yeah.
But even in the city centre, you can still add versatility into your diet, you know, and it doesn't need to be that you're picking wild foods. You could be growing some herbs in containers, you know, getting some cultivated things that are just a little bit different and full of antioxidants as well.
Yes, that is true. And this notion of trying to get as much variety into your diet, but also, as you're saying, picking up on that point, the wild food, because that is really robust, almost like robust nutrition.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's robust nutrition. These plants have had to survive themselves. They haven't been doused with chemicals to enable them to grow, to become resilient to pests. They've actually developed that themselves, and all these chemicals they make to protect themselves are where we find all the antioxidants. We eat the plants, we get the protection. But also eating your wild foods helps to increase the diversity of your microbiome.
Yes.
And we are really starting to dig down deep into that now and really understand the benefits of healthy gut, not just for our digestive system, again, for our whole body health, for reducing inflammation, improving hormonal handling, and actually upregulating neurotransmitters. A happy gut can equal a happy brain.
Well, that is also true, yes. And we've had a few shows recently about brain health.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I mean, a variety in our diet is really crucial for that. Yeah.
But also being outdoors in nature really helps our brain health.
And,
you know, we talk a lot nowadays about neurodiversity and, you know, things like ADHD, ADD. People that have ADHD are just living in a world that doesn't suit them. People with ADHD would have been absolutely fantastic out on a forage because you get that lovely dopamine fix, real alert, being out of doors. A lot of these neurodiversity problems are being exacerbated by the fact that we're actually not out in nature and not living that natural life.
Yeah.
I have to say what got me into foraging, people often say, do you teach foraging? And you know, I say, no, you know, foraging's for me, it's for the kitchen table. And actually, I did some hawthorn harvesting this morning as well, and every time I went to a tree I said, you know, I'd like to take some of your berries, I want to use it to feed my family and nourish my friends. And that's basically what I do foraging for. I'm out with the dog. Carly is coming up for 12 years old, and actually having a dog got me out in nature every day and really got me interested in foraging. So the two go beautifully hand in hand, because if I'm out for a mushroom walk and I come back with an empty basket, doesn't matter, the dog's been walked, I've had a nice time.
Yeah, and you look up in the canopy here, the sun's shining through, it's beautiful. It's actually quite a mild day, isn't it?
Incredibly mild.
Although it's very wet underfoot still after the storm. And, you know, I noticed so much when we were having that stormy weather. I was still going out for a walk every day. I didn't swim because it really wasn't safe to swim. The water was absolutely raging. But I made myself get out even in the windy weather every day, because I was really missing getting into the water and getting that nature fix every day. Not that I don't walk every day anyway, but it was like, you know, I'm not going to just stay in because it's windy.
Yeah, just get wrapped up and get outside. But, you know, some people listening to this will be, as I say, city dwellers. You're going to find a patch of nettles. You're going to find some lime flower trees. There are going to be pockets of nature within the city.
Yeah.
And those plants probably are really, really packed full of antioxidants because they've had a really hard task living in an environment which is actually not native to them. So
true.
You could still actually harvest some plants
but then,
in the city.
Yes, but then I've heard the argument. Here's the argument that you hear in the city. Oh, but all the pollution. So, you know, if you're picking wild nettles in the city, they're covered in pollution. Is that
something that we need to fear. I mean, because you can wash a nettle.
But is everything that's grown in the city or growing in the city going to be covered in pollution? I think about Edinburgh and I walk along the Water of Leith.
Mm.
Is that going to be any less polluted than the main road that's passing through fields of crops that we've got growing through through the centre of Fife? So, you know, it is something to really think about, you know.
Mm.
I often think about it with conventionally grown foods. Wild is better. You know, we know that blueberry is one of the foods that has a lot of... That's Carly doing a bit of foraging down, breaking up some branches. We know that blueberry, when it's conventionally grown, has a lot of chemical residue on it.
Yeah.
But blueberry also has a lot of antioxidants in it. Mm-hmm. So I often wonder, are you better to eat blueberry, conventionally grown, than no blueberry? Does the antioxidant outweigh anything else that's negative on that plant? And I mean, I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
But I would suspect that the pesticides and chemicals that are used in agriculture these days stay in your system for a while, I think, and that can be detrimental. I think that's the issue for me.
Mm-hmm. But then also you can increase your detoxification pathways by increasing your antioxidants.
Yeah, that's a good
point. It's a really, really interesting thing to think about. And I was, my National Institute of Medical Herbalists had a seminar about menopause the other day, and there was a very good nutritionist on, and she was talking about diet, and, you know, of course, we all know that organic's better, but actually, what everyone should be aiming for is to eat the best diet that they can afford.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's something to really think about, and supplement it with wild foods if you can, or homegrown foods, etc.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Mm. And get out into the countryside if you can,
mm-hmm.
and get some free wild food.
Yeah.
Because it's just growing here and it's going to waste. I'm all for feeding the birds, right? But we can benefit from hawthorns, let's say, too. We can benefit from rose hips, too.
Yeah, we don't need to strip the plants. What I did earlier on was I took some berries from every bush that I came across. And I also thought, I'm going to get lots of different berries here with lots of different compounds in them, because they're all coming off different bushes. Some of them are bright red, some of them are deep
quite
red.
Dark.
Yeah, so they're all going to have different levels of antioxidants.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I forage. I buy conventionally grown onions because they don't, you know, I do try and buy organic when I can, but things like onions I worry less about. They tend not to take up so many of the pesticides, but I'll always buy organic carrots and, you know, mushrooms wild, hawthorn wild. I try and mix and match an awful lot of it. So it's
makes sense.
Trying to take the best of everything you can do. Yeah.
It does make sense. Yeah, it really does. And then, you know, I made a raw rosehip syrup. Now, people will say, oh, but, you know, you're using sugar. Well, yeah, because that's how people have for hundreds of years, how people have actually made use of raw rosehips and made sure that they could get access to that high vitamin C in winter.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was thinking, look at all that sugar. And I was thinking, well, you don't use a lot of it at one time.
Yeah, and you're not shuffling the whole lot at one time either.
Drinking it.
Yeah, you're not drinking it by the gallon. Yeah, sugar is a natural excipient. It does work really well for drawing out sort of different compounds. There's sugar that, I use a dark molasses sugar in the hawthorn ketchup.
Yeah.
Dark molasses sugar has got lots of other health benefits to it. Yeah. It's got lots of trace minerals in it. Sugar's not great for us. Of course it's not. But actually, sugar is a natural compound. I've personally have more of an issue with somebody shoveling lots of sweeteners down our throat.
Well, yes.
Because at least sugar, your body recognises it as something natural that it would get in food, you know.
Yeah.
But all these sweeteners that you can't pronounce, oh my goodness, they are so toxic for your microbiome.
Really,
and that's one of the first things that'll get people to clean up in their diet. So yeah, if you were having a spoonful of rosehip syrup every day, that's fine. You know, if you're having a spoonful of rosehip syrup and a packet of penguins and sugary drinks, etc., you're going to be overloaded. But you're not going to be overloaded than having a little bit of sugar and some rosehip syrup.
No, that's right. And I was brought up on that. It was post-war, we used to have rosehip syrup. It was actually given out to kids to stop kids from getting scurvy and all kinds of vitamin C deficiency issues. So for me, it's a taste of childhood as well.
Well, we used to have puddings every day when I was growing up. You would have your main course and you'd have your pudding. And often it was things like sponge and custard. But actually, when you break that down, probably, yeah, gluten, we could say, yeah, gluten can be a bit inflammatory, but probably much less so in the 60s and 70s when I was growing up than it is now. Yeah. Eggs, milk, bit of sugar, and then your custard. And we were running about, running all that energy off, and it didn't, I don't think it did us any harm in particular, but it was all ingredients that were natural, you know. There weren't all these sort of chemical, as I say, chemical ingredients and ultra-processed foods that we're tending to consume now.
Absolutely, yeah.
Karen Brines-McLean and me in our element out in nature there. Next time, she'll be telling us how to make hawthorn ketchup ourselves and why we should make the effort to do so. A feast in store. I've posted some images on social media and we'll be uploading a blog post about the process too. You can find all the links at my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk. And you might want to take a look at my new website too. It's the place to go if you're looking for support with your health and well-being. You'll find all the details and testimonials for my work at safehavenhealing.uk. That's safehavenhealing.uk. And that's about it for now. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can listen to UK Health Radio shows on all the main podcast platforms these days. And if you like what you hear, or if they've helped you, do help us spread the word by sharing them. So until next time, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.